Hi there, and welcome to this special edition of Clan Chat. If you heard the previous episode, you would have heard 14 minutes of the interview I did with former netminder Chris Holt, as he spoke at length about his time with the club. Because we spoke for that long, we're releasing the full interview here at Uncut, as Chris covers some of the other subjects from his time here. So sit back and listen as Holtsey lays it all bare in this fascinating chat, and I began by asking him to sum up his time at the club.
I'd say it was everything that I hoped it was going to be. You know, I came to Brayhead knowing that was going to be the last season that I was going to play, and I came there for, you know, a few unique reasons. I had, you know, while I enjoyed some great success in the years leading up to that, whether it was in Russia or, you know, some of the other leagues I was in, I really wanted to get back to a year where I didn't feel like I had to struggle the whole year in my life away from the arena. You know, there was obviously a lot of North American guys on the team, and even the local guys were English speakers. You know, all accent aside, I could pretty much understand what they were saying. You know, Finner was a Canadian coach who I knew who he was, and it's just I was looking for that kind of experience. You know, I wanted to get back with people that I knew that I was going to have a really great time playing the game, and who probably played the game like I wanted to play it, and I was going to be in a place that I really enjoyed living and experiencing that kind of culture. So it lived up to all of that. I really loved all the guys that we played with, and I really enjoyed playing for Finner. I really enjoyed, you know, Gareth and the organization, and most of all, I really enjoyed my time in Scotland.
Give us a reminder of the guys you shared the locker room with that year. That, from what I remember, there was a lot of good characters in there.
Oh, God. I mean, and you know, I only know them by nickname, you know. So we had, you know, we had Keither, you had Mizey, you know, you had Barry McKenzie, and, you know, of course, Gary Russell and I became very close. You know, Nathan McKeever, and the list really goes on. A lot of the guys that you'd probably consider putting up on your wall, you know, you had the exact character of people that I really enjoyed. I thought that Keither was a great leader, and I enjoyed having him as a captain. And I thought that he preached a lot of the things that, you know, I hadn't heard for a while. You know, he preached playing tough, and he preached, you know, a family and a brotherhood. And you know, when you play in some of these other countries, some of these other leagues, it's, you know, kind of a lot of everyone for themselves. And the locker room guys were fantastic, and it all was kind of summed up by having Finner as a coach and how much I respect him and what he did for Brayhead and how he led us. I think if you talk to a lot of the guys that were on the team at that time, either most of us came there or stayed there because of Finner. So I can't say enough about the teammates I had and the coach I had.
Now, you mentioned there you went into the year knowing it was going to be your last year as a pro player. Retirement was coming. But you speak so warmly about the guys you played with, the friendships that you built. Did you ever at any time think, you know, maybe retirement not just yet? Did it ever cross your mind?
Not really. I think that there's something to, you know, and I have friends that are still playing now and are even in the NHL and are thinking about retiring, and, you know, they're kind of hanging on. And I think there's a certain level of peace that you get when you exit the game on your own schedule. You know, I didn't play long enough for the game to turn its back on me and say, you know, Holtze, you can't do it anymore. You know, I finished either at or very close to the top of the goaltending table, and you know, our team had a pretty successful year. In a playoff system over there, things end very quickly, and that's unfortunate. I felt that we had a pretty a tough start, but a successful year. And I have a lot of peace knowing you know, that I left the game when I wanted to, and the body, you know, my knees and that was a bigger problem than most people realize, and it was kind of an everyday battle and an everyday, you know, it was an everyday thing that I had to deal with, and it was time to go. Whether I wanted to keep or not, it wasn't. I'll tell you this story. I retire there in April, and then it's Christmas, and I'm in Arizona, so I've been out of the game for 8 months or so. And I'm just playing golf down in Arizona, and I take a golf swing, and my left knee just explodes. And, and it's to the point now where the surgeons won't even do anything. That, you know, I need a double knee replacement, and they're trying not to do it till I'm 40 years old, which guarantees 6 more years of pain for me. But it's I wouldn't have made it, you know, even if I wanted to keep playing, and if I had stayed in Brayhead, I wouldn't have made it through the season. So in my eyes, I left it at exactly the right time, and I was able to leave while I was still able to play and play well. And I mean, I like knowing that I probably could have come back if I wanted to, and I have a lot of peace knowing that I left the game on good terms and not because nobody wanted me anymore.
I remember your very last game, the playoff game. I think it was against Fife Flyers, and Clan had lost in the manner that they did, and you know, you applauded the fans, that you knew that was you. Did it feel sudden, the fact that Clan had suddenly gone from losing the game to all of a sudden the career was all over? Did that emotion just come rushing to you at that point?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I don't think you can, as much as I tried, I don't think that you can mentally prepare for that moment. And it was, on one sense, an extremely sad, you know, situation. But if I'm being honest, there's a very small sense of relief too that it's over. You know, it's something that consumes your entire life, and while it is something that you do, and it's something that you love to do, you know, hockey for all of us at you know, once you get into your 30s, hockey for us has been a business for a long time, and it's one that beats you up. And as sad as you are, you know, that it's over, the hardest part was stepping off the ice. You know, I think that was the hardest part for me. But once I took the step and started walking towards the locker room, I think it was, you know, the relief kind of started setting in that, you know, maybe I wouldn't have to, you know, spend every day in pain anymore. Maybe you wouldn't have to, you know, maybe now I don't have to spend so much time away from my kids. You know, so it's there, you get a lot of relief, but the hardest, the most difficult piece of the whole thing was, and if you, I don't know if it's on film, but I'm sure I stood there at the door for a second, because I think the hardest part is just taking the one step off of the ice when you know it's going to be the last time.
Now, let's take you back to the very start of that season, and the Clan were involved in the Champions Hockey League, the first and only time the Clan have been involved in that tournament. A huge step up, I think you'll agree, on that very first night in Växjö in Sweden. What was your memories of that night in particular? As I recall, quite a tough night for the team.
Huh, the one in Sweden, I mean, we hadn't been together very long. And I mean, it's no secret that the Swedish Elite League is, you know, I would put it up there fighting for the third best league in the world. So you're in the Elite Ice Hockey League in Britain, where you're not really known for producing the world's hockey talent. And you're going into an environment full of, you know, guys that had played in the NHL and had NHL contracts, and, you know, some of the best European players there are. And I think it's it was no surprise that we kind of got run out of. I don't remember the final score. Did it get to double digits?
10-2. We finished 10-2.
Yeah, you know, tough start for me in the in the league, but. You know, that's a situation where it's not, I mean, it wasn't even fair. I mean, that's not there was nothing that we could do. There was no amount of preparation that was going to get us even, you know, even close to that. But I think it was a small wake-up call, and I think that when we went into the next two games, you know, I think you saw as much fight as you saw in those games was as much as we had. Mm. You know, we obviously won the one game at home, I think against the German team, right?
That's right, yep, Ingolstadt, yep.
Yeah, we won the game, and even the game away, do we play at Ingolstadt too?
That's right, yep.
Yeah, so we even that game away, I mean, God, that game was close for a long time. I mean, we were hanging around that game, and you know, the German league is I consider a very good league, and it's got some fantastic players in it. You know, but it's not the Swedish league. So I think we immediately felt like, hey, okay, we just got, you know, pummeled by the Swedish team, and not just a Swedish team, but a really good one in that league. And now we're in Germany where we might have a little more of a chance. You know, we got a lot of guys that maybe have played in that league before or had opportunities to play in that league. And, you know, and it showed. And I think we had a little more fight, and we lasted really well into that game. I think we got in some penalty trouble, I think, and we ended up kind of letting it slip away on the penalty kill. But then when they, you know, but I think when we left that game, we felt that when they came to us and when they came to our rink in Brayhead and with our fans and the energy that they were going to give us, I think that was one that we felt that we had a shot. You know, if we could keep it together and not get in trouble, I think that we had a shot to win, and then obviously we did. And you know, let's not play down that. I mean, first of all, Bruce, he scored an unbelievable goal. That really got everybody fired up. I know you said not to bring him up, but I brought him up. but I'm praising him. He scored an absolute the goal of the year maybe for him. And that got everybody really believing early that, okay, well, you know, we might be in this. And then it also helped that there was, I don't remember the situation, but they pulled their goalie when it was maybe a one, I think maybe had to win by two, or there was some goal differential thing that they needed. I remember we scored a goal or an extra empty net goal that really kind of relieved the stress of the situation that I can't remember the whole scenario. It's, you guys over there, you guys do such weird thing with like aggregate scores and all these like weird things where like there was a situation where we scored an empty netter and I couldn't believe the goalie was out. And, you know, we won the game, obviously. But to sum it all up, you know, such a great moment for the club, such a great moment for the league. And I think that winning that game, and I don't know the history of the league being in the Champions League and any other success. Did Sheffield win a game the year before or anything? Like, was that the first Elite Ice Hockey Champions League win?
Nottingham played the year before. They beat Hamburg Freezers in one of their games as well. They beat a German team also.
Okay, so it's, I mean, that win by Nottingham and then ours against Ingolstadt, it just gives your league a little bit more respect, and even just winning a game like that can entice a player who's thinking about coming to that league to pull the trigger and go, and strengthen your league. It has a ripple effect, you know, that can last several years because you win, you know, you win a game like that, and maybe somebody from the Ingolstadt team goes, oh, you know, this league might not be a joke. You know, this might be a real legit, you know, real legit league that I'll think about going to. And it strengthens your league. So, I had a great time playing in it, and was really happy to have the opportunity to play in the Champions League, and I was really happy we could get a win for Brayhead.
Now, I want to ask about, you talked about injury and obviously how it's affected you since you've left the club, but I remember you got injured around about Christmas time in the year that you were here, and the club moved to bring in Travis Fullerton as a kind of backup to you, and obviously Travis has established himself as a goalie in this league since, of course. What was the dynamic like between you and he, and of course you had Gary Russell in the mix as well? What was it like between the three of you?
It was great. Travis was a great guy. You know, I think for the entire year, even from the day I got there, the relationship between Gary and I was great, you know. And I never went in there with an attitude that, you know, I was some guy that had been other places and was far and away better. I'm, you know, I looked to him right away to be a friend and to, you know, to bounce ideas off of and compete with in practice. And our relationship, I thought throughout the year was great. I really do wish though, you know, as well as Travis did, and he came in and did a fine job. I really wish that Gary got more of an opportunity to play that year, even when I was healthy. You know, I think that could have done, you know, some good for my own well-being to be able to take a few nights off, even just mentally. You know, that it's sometimes a lot to, you know, just you're out there for 60 minutes, right? So every game you play, you're playing three games as a player. So you're mentally and in some aspect, you know, aspects physically. And so I would have really liked to see Gary get, you know, 10 or 15 starts that year, even when I was healthy. And then when I went down, I was really hoping that he was going to get a few opportunities to play too, because I do think that he is good and he is capable, and it's extremely difficult, you know, regardless of his talent, it's extremely difficult to sit on the bench for 20 games, you know, and then come in and be sharp. You know, it's not easy to do when you're playing once every four or five games, but when I'm out there playing, you know, 15 games in a row, it's not an easy role for him to fill. I wish that he got a few more opportunities to kind of feel it and figure it out, because I think he could have done, you know, even more for the club than he did. But when Travis came in, I think we all, you know, got along, and Gary was just the perfect professional. And, you know, I know there was times in the season where he was frustrated, but he worked really hard not to let you show it. I'm sure there was times that he was frustrated with me playing 20 games in a row, and he did a really, you know, you don't find a lot of partners like that who can be that professional in a tough situation. So as far as the goaltending brotherhood went throughout the season, whether it was myself or Gary or Travis who came in, I think on the surface and at the core, we were all okay, you know, with each other. And that's kind of how I would sum that up.
You say that the fact that you felt Gary should have got more ice time even before Travis came in, et cetera, et cetera. Was that something you ever brought up with Ryan at the time? Was that something you had a conversation with him about, just saying, look, give the kid a bit more of a chance? You know, you reckon he's good enough? Did that ever come up at any time?
I feel like it probably did. I'm not usually the one to kind of, you know, pull punches or not say what I think. You know, but at the same time, that's as much as I can maybe suggest it or say it. You know, at the same time too, you know, he's gonna look at me and go, "Well, what, are you tired?" And of course I'm gonna say no. Mm-hmm. You know, so but I'm sure it came up. You know. But you know, those are at the same time too, there's a line, right? Those are the decision that Finner's paid to make, and I'm not gonna step in and do, you know, try and pretend to do his job for him. I've always been, as far as playing and not playing, you know, you play when you're told to play and you sit when you're told to sit, and you practice hard every day and you compete, and it all kind of takes care of itself. And There were a few situations where I thought, you know, Gary probably should have got a start, whether I had played a lot or, you know, maybe I had not played very well the night before. You know, if I had kind of one of those rare games that got away from me, it would have been nice to take that mental break for a second and regroup before just kind of going back in there. But it's different when you got a short schedule. You know, I don't know. What is there, 40, you know, 45, 50 games? It's a pretty short schedule, and every game counts so much because you guys got all these different cups that you're playing for during the year, and for some reason, you know, they all matter. That's something that I never really understood, but obviously the culture of the Elite League is you've got the whatever the cup is that you're playing for at the beginning. And then you got the one you're trying to win. They always seem like some other. It's like three leagues within a league are happening at the same time. This is a conference game, and this one's for this cup, and this one's for that cup, and they all kind of matter, you know, a lot. And so, I can understand why I played a lot, and with the, you know, pedigree I had, and how I was, you know, playing most nights. It's probably hard to take me out, but I'm sure it came up. Yeah, that sounds very self-indulgent, but I'm sure it came up. But at the same time, you know, it's like, you know, what game do you sit Keither? You know, what game do you sit Mizey? Like, these are the guys that you need. They're the guys that you lean on, and our team, you know, defensively went through some woes, and I was being leaned on a lot, and so I get it. You know, I get why he didn't play, but as his partner and as someone who sees him in practice every day and sees how hard that he competes, and you know, he's constantly talking to me about goaltending and learning, and I would have loved to see him play more games because I was a Gary Russell fan.
Right, I've written it down, I've scored it out, I've written it down, I've scored it out, and I'm just going to ask it. We all remember you for the podcast thing you did, and you talked about a certain ex-teammate of yours, Chris yeah. Bruton, and needless to say, you had very strong opinions of him. I'm not going to get you to go over what you said at the time. I think that's all out there, everybody knows about that. But what did you make of the reaction to that? Because obviously that's how a lot of people will remember you from your time at the club. Not only that, and obviously what you did on the ice, but that interview really caused a bit of a stir.
Well, I think that, I was the one who said what a lot of our guys were thinking. You know, it wasn't a good situation, and some things happened, and it wasn't the culture that we were trying to establish in our locker room, and it just, you know, some marriages need to end, and that was just kind of one of them. And I don't think that Brutes is a bad guy. I enjoyed the time that I actually spent with him, you know, but there were just some decisions made that were against our, you know, what we were trying to do and what we were trying to do as a group. And so I think that the time came, and it came abruptly, and that was the way that it went down, and it was unfortunate. But, you know, I was as good of a player as he was, and as good of a player as anyone is. You know, if the same situation had involved, you know, Meyer or Keith, I would have said the same thing, and our locker room would have done the same thing. You know, it didn't matter that it was Chris Bruton; it could have been anybody. If anybody makes those kind of decisions, then, you know, the family doesn't care who you are. You know, and that's the situation that came about. You know, nobody is above the group in any respect, and that was something that I, you know, piped up and said. That was something that Matt piped up and said. And when you act like you're above the group, or even if you're making a mistake or two, we were at a point where we were now at a zero tolerance situation for us as leaders on the team. And it happened, and I understand the fans, because he's a good player, and he was a great player for us. And they're going, what the hell are we doing? You know, why are we trading, you know, one of our better players? And he was one of our better players. But the, you know, no one's above the brotherhood, and, you know, the brotherhood spoke, and that's what it was. And I just, you know, I wanted to make sure that people understood that, yes, he is a great player, and I don't know what the cultures are like in other sports and other sports that are more prominent in your area. But in the in the world of hockey and in the way that hockey governs itself in a locker room and on the ice in practice, and the amount of fights that teammate, like legitimate gloves off fights that teammates get into in practice, is to govern that culture. It is on us as players to enforce our culture of a team on a daily basis, right? Against it, just like, you know, if someone cheap shots one of our players on the ice, you know, we expect five guys to go after that guy and another 15 needing to be held back from jumping over the bench. And same thing in practice. If somebody does something in practice, we expect all the guys on the ice to handle it, right? And same things go for off the ice. So that's the situation we were in. And I don't think that anybody else inside of our locker room disagreed with what I said. Was it a little bit harsh and insensitive? Probably. But I was past the point of being sensitive about it. And, you know, the people that were saying that it was a ridiculous move and how could we be trading a player like this and this and that, well, maybe you need to understand that it's not just about putting points on the scoreboard, and it's not just about putting, you know, points on the sheet. It's about maintaining the culture of your team, and nobody's above anyone else. And that's what we enforced, and that the result is what it was. And that's it.
So a few years on, if hypothetically you were to walk into a bar somewhere and he happens to be sitting there, would you sit and have a beer with him? Would you like to?
Absolutely, I would.
Make peace.
I would, because I think, you know, and I'm not going to go in. Obviously, I'm not going into, you know, what the reasons for the internal animosity were. But I think that anybody in there, there can't be a situation that I can see, just knowing him, where he probably looks back and would say, you know, I wish I would have, you know, done some things different. You know, I think you'd be crazy to sit there and say, you know, I would be the first to say, hey, you know, what I said was probably a little emotional and over the line, and I would apologize for that. And I would be hard pressed to think that he wouldn't turn around and say, you know, I wish I would have done some things different too. Because I don't think he's a bad person at all. I just think that, you know, on those days and in that situation, mistakes were made, and they were just ones that the Brotherhood wasn't going to tolerate. So that's just how it went.
Start to wrap things up now. I just want to ask you what your favourite memory of being at the club was in your year here. I dare say there might have been a game that sticks out, a moment perhaps, even something off the ice. What would you regard as a favourite memory from your time at the club?
Some memories that stick out. Obviously, you know, the last moment that sticks out, and I'll forever have an everlasting memory of the arena and of the fans and of that moment, you know, even though it's, you know, a goal against, which you should never forget. But for a goalie, it's always a goal against that ends your career. You know, you can't go out scoring. So it's something like that, unless you win it all. But hearing the fans when we won the Ingolstadt game was a really cool experience, around the ice. I don't know, playing in a shopping mall, that was a first for me. You know, that was fun. And then off the ice, you know, the friendships, you know, people like yourself, people, you know, the fan club and everybody, you just made it so great. You made it such a good decision, one that I struggled making whether I was going to play another season or not. And you made it such a good decision, from the teammates to the organization to the fans to the supporters, you know, the supporters club, you know, just the things that you remember, I think, are just the dumb ones, you know, things like riding on the bus, playing cards, things like, you know, they always say, you know, you never really miss, you know, putting the gear on or like playing in the games and stuff. You miss all the other stuff. You miss being in a locker room, and you miss riding the bus, and you miss, you know, telling stories and these kind of things. Like, that's kind of the really the stuff you miss is the real, like, team, the real team aspect of it. Playing the game is only a 2.5 hour part of being a team. You know, it's everything else that you kind of miss. And of course, last but not least, I'm such a golf snob that I I got to play some amazing golf courses while I was there. So that's obviously a great memory too, but just in general, such a great experience, one that I would absolutely recommend to anybody considering going. And I only have people like yourself and anybody who's listening to this to thank for that.
So do you keep tabs on the club now? Obviously, there's been a name change since you were here. Glasgow Clan is the name now. Do you keep tabs on how things are going over here? Do you keep an eye on what the scores are and things?
I don't keep a lot of eyes on the score lines. I do still follow you guys on Twitter, so it's nice to get updates on that kind of thing. And I know Fitzy's the coach, and I'm sure everyone's happy to have him back. In I know he played a couple seasons, but I'm sure everyone's happy to have him back around and not wearing orange. And I think I know Pity is still there. That guy won't die. So he's still kicking around, probably being one of your offensive guys, hopefully still. But I when I left the game, I really left it. I left it pretty cold turkey, and I didn't follow it very much. I think just mentally, I was done. I was exhausted from it, and I was ready to take a break. And I didn't watch a lot of NHL games on TV. And I'm fortunate enough to still be working in sports and still being around locker rooms and coaches and, on occasion, a hockey one where I feel really at home. As far as keeping tabs on the club at a deep level, no, but, I do still follow the Twitter as much as I can. And, I'm a pretty open Glasgow Clan fan, and I love the name change too. I think it's about time. I think it'll only help, Brayhead Clan and just being in that small area. I think it's, for me, the right decision to go Glasgow Clan, and it's such a wonderful city, and nobody has to Google where it is, like I did. I had to Google it, so I wish all the best for the Clan, absolutely.
So let's finish up then. Just finally, you touched on it there, so let's give you a chance to expand on it. What are you doing with yourself now, 3 years on from your retirement and settling into family life and, well, playing more golf, it seems?
Yeah, I'm playing a lot more golf. The handicap is low. I work for a company that sells sports analytics software. So we work with, every college Division I, basketball team and lacrosse team and soccer team and football and everything. We're kind of the giant in the sports analytics market. So our stuff allows teams to edit their game film efficiently and run reports on themselves and find edges on their opponent. And it's fun to still be in that realm. So I work in sales there, and I've got a Division I collegiate conference that I represent, and I love the relationships that I have there, and it's fun to still be able to go to basketball games and be around locker rooms and go to hockey games and do that stuff. I it's been very therapeutic for me to not be all the way out of sports. I think that for me would be very difficult. You always hear of a lot of guys that struggle with depression and struggle with that kind of stuff when they leave the game, because you really feel, and it's very true, and I went through it for a couple of months right after the fact where, you go to sleep one night and you're somebody important and you're somebody in a world that highly respects you and respects your opinion and you're experienced and a veteran and people are looking up to you, and then you step away from the game and you wake up and you're nobody. You're somebody that, I don't have a college degree and I don't have any work experience in the, air quotes, real world. And, when you're in a situation where just nobody cares anymore, that's a really hard transition to make overnight. So I'm very blessed and fortunate to be still in the world of sports, and I'm so thankful that my company took a chance on me and allowed me to do that, because I think I'd be in a lot different place if I was, selling refrigerators or something. I think I don't know what I'd be doing. So very, very happy and happy to be still in sports and happy to be around my kids and watching their activities and, playing golf on a weekend instead of riding a bus. It's got its perks to be out of the game too.
That was Chris Holt, former Brayhead Clan netminder, telling us all about his time with the club and what he's up to now. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did recording it. Anyway, that's it. Keep up to date with the clan by checking out the website, clanihc.com, or by following us on social media by liking the official Facebook page, or by following us on Twitter and Instagram at clanihc is the handle. Don't forget to subscribe to Clan Chat on Apple Podcasts, Spotify or Audioboom, and if you do, new episodes will automatically download to your device. My special thanks to Chris Holt for his time and to producer Stuart Priest for his great work. My thanks to you for listening. And I'll be back real soon with another Clan Chat. Bye for now.